to be honest, I've always been a bit scared of St. Paul. His intensity, his certainty, his strong authoritative leadership, his intellectual grandeur. He never seemed all that easy with people. Famous confrontations with Peter, as well as the church in Jerusalem. But when Peter came to Antioch, I opposed him in public, because he was clearly wrong. Before some men who had been sent by James arrived there, Peter had been eating with the Gentile brothers. But after these men arrived, he drew back and would not eat with the Gentiles because he was afraid. Brackets, the big hypocrite. Then there was an undignified squabble with Barnabas over how to deal with John Mark's homesickness and the abandonment of the missionary project. He seemed to love arguments, Paul, and winning them. And there always was what looked like a seam of intolerance running through his worldview. Women to keep silent in church. Women not to cut their hair. Wives, submit to your husbands. A rigour and an intransigence that wasn't very pretty sometimes, and which certainly runs counter to the tolerant times in which we live, or in which we like to think we live. A few verses about homosexuality that reflect and echo the rigour of his times, the specifics of his background. Some unreconstructed hints of the patriarchy in his attitude to women, largely a typical first century man. Yet, always his single-minded commitment to the gospel of grace, not rules, not works, not achievement, not personal merit. Instead, Paul rescues the true gospel from those who wanted to hedge it around with the failed old values, measures, the very justifications the gospel was born to challenge and replace. Faith, not works. Grace, not works. Spirit, not laws. Paul of Tarsus, quite a handful, fierce, determined and focused, and not someone you or I might automatically think capable of tenderness, generosity of heart, gentle compassion. Well, you would be wrong just as I would be wrong. For when he speaks of his congregations, it is with tears welling in his eyes. When he sends greetings to the churches he had founded or served, though he speaks with honesty and challenges any derelictions, he also speaks with a smile in his voice and true affection in his heart. I thank my God every time I remember you. In all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. It is right for me to feel this way about all of you, since I have you in my heart. And whether I am in chains or defending and confirming the gospel, all of you share in God's grace with me. God can testify how I long for all of you with the affection of Christ Jesus. And let's not forget, it's Paul, for all his searing critiques of error, deviation or drift. It's Paul who writes those precious words of love in 1 Corinthians 13. And have come to mean so much to so many people, have enriched and blessed countless weddings. I like the Scottish version. Can I speak with the tongues of men and angels, but hae nae love in my heart, I'm nane better, nor done out breasts, nor a ringing cymbal. Can I hae the gift of prophecy, and I'm acquaint with all the secret mind of God, and ken all thing other that man may ken? And can I have such faith as I can flit the hills for their larks? Can I have all that? But any love in my heart, I am nocht. Can I scale all my gids and graith and omus? And can I gie up my body to be burnt in ass? Can I e'en do that? But any love in my heart, I'm nane the better of it. Love is patient for, love is couthy and kind. Love is nain jealous, nain sprosy, nain bowded with pride, nain misleared, nain hamedrouchit, nain toasty. Love keeps nae nixtick of the wrangs it drees, finds nae pleasure in the ill work of others, is aye lifted up when truth dings lees, kens aye to keep a calm sooch, is aye sweared to misdoot, aye hopes the best, aye bides the worst. Love will ne'er fail, prophecies, they e'en be byway. Tongues they seen devoul, knowledge is e'en be byway. Our knowledge is howfling, our prophesying is howfling, but when the perfect is coming, the unperfect will be byway. In my bairn days, I had the speech of a bairn, the thoughts of a bairn, the mind of a bairn, but now that I'm grown man muckle, I'm through with all thing bairnly. Now we're like looking in a mirror and seeing all thing athraw, but then we shall look all thing braid in the face. Now I ken all thing Hoffling's ways, then I will ken all things as well as God kens me. In small, there is three things bides for aye: faith, hope, love, but the greatest of the three is love. Paul, who, in case you think otherwise, is, in my opinion, one of the greatest men who ever lived, and whose profound insights found the core of the Christian faith and rescued it, Paul it was, whose genius, courage and faith wrested the infant Christian gospel from the narrow-minded view that it was nothing more than Judaism with extras. And it was he who helped the church to understand this gospel was liberation for the whole world. Paul saw that first, proclaimed it with passion and suffered, and in the end died for that gospel. And it is Paul who assures us with utter conviction that there is nothing in heaven or earth that can separate us from the love of Christ. Nothing in heaven or earth that can separate us from the love of Christ. So, not at all the academic, aloof from the world in his ivory tower with his ideas and his concepts and his pure theology. Human, humane, grounded with a faith that informed his life and a life that was moulded by his faith. He was also a beautiful letter writer and a writer of beautiful letters, like the one we were privileged to read today, Philemon, to his dear friend Philemon. It's personal, tender, gracious, wise, full of humanity, honesty and love, as he seeks to negotiate the kindly treatment of a runaway slave, Onesimus. No, Paul doesn't rail against slavery. It would have been odd, incongruous and totally alien to his world and his worldview if he had. Indeed, we would rightly have wondered about the authenticity of the letter if it had contained ideas and ideology that would have been quite literally unthinkable in first century ancient Near East. People aren't thinking clearly or fairly if they seek to impose values that have taken 2,000 years to evolve on people who lived in a very different world at a very different time. Like the woman who challenged me with the searching theological conundrum, if Jesus was the Son of God, why was he not a vegetarian? Perhaps for the same reason he did not invent the bagless vacuum cleaner. It's just bad thinking to imagine that people could or should have made a quantum leap across the centuries and suddenly started thinking like 21st century Westerners, when in fact they were rooted in the reality of first century Palestine. No, the battle with slavery would be fought by other Christians much later, and sadly still has to be fought in our times, incredible though that may seem. No, Paul's issue is a very personal and human one, and engages with the moral complexities of a runaway slave, Onesimus, who's come to be a loved adopted son, precious to Paul, supportive to him in his imprisonment, a fine, dedicated Christian believer. But still, a runaway slave, with all the shadows of illegality, potential punishment and danger associated with that. Paul wants to put things right, make things right, remove all the shadows, all the dubiety, all the impropriety. And so he sends Onesimus back to his master with a letter, with a plea that Philemon might both welcome and forgive someone who is no longer simply a slave and a disobedient one at that, but a Christian brother, loved by Paul, needed by him. Paul writes, "I'm sending him back to you now, and with him goes my heart. I'm sending him back to you now, and with him goes my heart." So no pressure there, Philemon. Diplomatic, creative, loving. The letter tells us a lot about where Paul has come to on his journey. It's not just about being a prisoner with the threat of death hanging over him, someone who might be entitled to focus on his own crisis, but someone who's wanting to take the steps required to make things right, to put things right, motivated by his faith, which shapes his intentions, priorities, and conduct. Kind of like it should be. This great theologian, this profound influencer and shaper of the thinking of the church, has the kind of faith that makes a difference to how he lives his life, how he deals with other people, and how he can be a builder of bridges, a healer of hearts, a reconciler. All of these are roles to which we are called, and all of us will have loose ends out there, unfinished business, regrets, tangled webs woven over the years. Paul's example challenges us to take the initiative, to make the first move. When we're motivated by the same gracious spirit, placing our priority on people, we can't read the letter Paul writes and not be challenged to a similar creative impulse. And we find ourselves thinking, and we should, who needs that phone call from us? Whose life would be blessed and enriched by that letter from us? What tone should undergird that email that we could send, should send? And who will be set free when we take that healing, reconciling, grace-filled, spirit-inspired initiative? Who will be set free? Them or us?